Gentlemen, welcome to the Tuesday get-together. It's the Brazilian version only because Sebastian is probably relaxing somewhere on the Canary Islands. I haven't heard from him and I don't expect to. So we have two subjects which you can choose from. The first subject is either memories. That was a subject that was chosen and created by Julia. And the other subject that we can talk about is fame. And that was a subject generated by Clea. And there is a third one. It's about the future, but we actually had this kind of discussion a few weeks ago or months ago, which was generated by Maxime. So the choice is yours, gentlemen. Igor, what have you chosen to talk about? What would you like to question Isma and myself about, either fame or memories?
Well, I have to choose one and go with that, or it's random. I can alternate between the two talks.
Well, we can do that as well. That can make it really interesting. Isma, do you agree with that?
No problem.
we have to think on our feet. Yeah,
I think I was born as a debating man.
Here comes the Toastmaster contingency here.
Okay, okay, I will start with an easy one.
Okay, go ahead, Igor. What is your first question?
What's memory in your perspective?
Who is this question for, Isma or me?
I think Isma can begin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Memory by itself, it can't be good or bad. It depends on, because we have bad and good memory. And if possible, I would like to forget all my bad memories and only maintain my good memories. But it's not possible. And memory... can you repeat your question, please?
Of course. My question is, what is memory?
Memory is something that happened in your life and is impressed in your mind, your spirit, and you can't get free of them.
Frank, what's memory?
I know you well enough to suspect from my memory of speaking with you, Igor, that the question is a loaded question.
No, it's not. Maybe. Depends.
See, my memory serves me right, yes, of the many discussions that we have had. But on the superficial level of it, memory is a collection of thoughts linked to past experiences, be they good or be they bad. And the experiences or something that happens in one's life can trigger a memory or to remember something that happened in the past. So it is basically a collection of experiences which are stored in our brains. Yeah, that's how I would say it. Yeah. All things are circular. So Igor, what is memory for you?
Well, I didn't ask with the expectation to answer, but once you ask it. Okay, so I think memory, it's something we create in your brain, which is made of our past experience and our perspective of the world in general. So I don't think the memory we have as human beings, the same memory as a computer have, for example. I think every time, and I have read about that, of course, that every time we have some memory, actually we are constructing this memory every time. So it's never a proven impression of what happened. It's something we create. So that's my short answer. And the follow-up question is, because I'm really interested in knowing, you know, I'm like, it's not a redundant question. I'm really interested on. Mm-hmm. So like in, because you guys are more experienced than me, that's why I'm asking. So like, if you thinking about your life, if you could choose to keep memories forever, so until the last day, your last day on earth, like what would be those memories? Of course, it don't need to be very personal, can be some kind of category if you want, but as experienced people more than me, of course, like what kind of memories would you like to keep until the last day on earth?
Igor, you're slightly, sorry, Isma, you're a little bit younger than I am. I need more time. I need more time to think.
If I could, I wouldn't like to maintain the memories that because when we remember something, at least it happened to me. When it was a bad memory, I had the same feeling or almost the same feelings when I had for the first time. And if possible, I would like to forget this kind of memory. For example, when I fought against someone, when I have a bad experience, it doesn't matter if in family or in my job. And this kind of memories, I would like to forget it forever.
And which one would you like to keep forever?
For example, the first time I saw the ocean, I was 18. I suppose it was one that I would like to maintain. The first time I went to Europe, I'd like to maintain all the memories I had. And for example, some other good memories, for example, some girls that I had on my life, for the first time I went to the cinema, it wasn't a good experience because I got very afraid of the images because I have no idea what it was, because on that time I didn't have TV at home, and it wasn't so good, but I think it was interesting. Then I would like to maintain it. I was 80 years old, and a nice and beautiful female neighbor got us to the move. It was interesting. Her name was Lucia. I suppose she was 14, 15, and I was 8. I think it is a marvelous experience. And when I don't remember exactly when I perceived that, but when I realized that to know how to read and how to write is so important of my life, I wouldn't like to forget this experience since I began at school. I suppose it was amazing. I was 80 as well. And many others.
We won't ask. It's a very good question, Igor. And I'm going to answer it from a slightly different perspective. I have been self-employed for pretty much for 30 years. And in these 30 years, you go through enormous peaks successes, and then you can also go through some very, very dark periods of time. And I think the memories and the beauty of your question is that you didn't actually quantify the amount of memories we could keep forever. So I would probably keep all the memories, irrespective of whether they are good or bad, that helped me make the right decisions so that I could always refer back to them and say, in this situation or in that situation, I did this, or this helped me, or this was good, or something like that. And of course, you can then extend that into private scenarios, so positive relationships with people, negative relationships with people. So I would actually keep all my memories, because I don't actually regret anything that I have done. So since you didn't put a quantity to it, I'm going to take everything and say, for the 61 plus years that I have lived, I regret nothing. It's been pretty bad at times. It's been fantastic at times. So all my memories serve me to help me for however long I have left on this planet.
Good answer.
I have to say that too. That was a really good answer.
Yes, that's what I do. Maybe I write about that tomorrow in my diary, because okay. I'm writing every day. Okay, so how old are you, Frank?
A couple of weeks short of 62.
Oh, and you, Ismar?
I am 61, and I will turn this year 62.
Interesting. Yeah. Just for curiosity. I don't have any comments on that.
We can't help it. Okay. So
except
you,
I am half your age. That's a good comment.
Exactly. Ismar, let's throw the ball across to you. What questions would you like? The topic is either fame or memories, but I think we've sort of come to the memories corner of the discussion. So, Isma, do you have a question first for Igor and then for moi?
It's still about memory.
If you want, or we can talk about fame and maybe we can link
okay,
the two.
I have one for you too about memory. In which occasion and why do you get disappointed with your memory?
So who will start?
The youngest may always start. Igor, we have a long time to think about this. We have to dig deep in our memories and our experience. Yeah, we've got 30 years plus on you. So,
well, I really get frustrated with my memory when I'm talking to someone or I'm writing something on, usually I'm doing some intellectual work, and afterwards, like in the day, the next day, maybe 1 week later, I remember of something, some quote, some book, some video, anything I remember that could have been very useful at that time. But the opportunity is passed away. I get really frustrated about that. And I really envy people who can remember reference, quotes, books during the conversation. That's when I get frustrated.
Can you repeat the question, Isma?
In which kind of occasion do you feel frustrated, disappointed with your memory, and why?
So I suppose I could feel frustrated now because I just forgot the question.
So but it's something
was
that's
it on
not
purpose?
Important in this case.
My memory. Who wrote these questions? I don't know if I get frustrated by a lack of memory. And maybe Isma, you can help me on this one. I'm not going to get frustrated by the lack of memory of things that happened in the past, but because my mother lives with us here in our house, I'm of course in very close contact with her, and I notice that her memory is beginning to recede. She can remember certain things, she forgets other things. There are times when I get the same story repeated each evening and I don't say anything. So I think the frustration lies in the future, that we know that in the future we will have memory loss problems. And unless we write everything down or make notes or record everything, it might actually be difficult to remember the good moments that we experienced or the bad moments that we experienced. So I would, but the beauty of this frustration is that I can try to prolong the process of having a good memory. Yeah, speaking three languages, thinking a lot, using my brain a lot. Yeah, so I wouldn't get frustrated from something that happened in the past, but I would certainly get frustrated if I see that in my own personal future I might suffer the same problems that my father had. My father suffered from memory loss before he died. My mother is going the same way. So I can expect that the same will happen to me in 20, 25 years time, which is still a long way, but you don't know. Yeah. You have a follow-up question, Isma, or maybe you want to talk your perspective on this.
I get frustrated with my memory in some case, as Igor, when I want to remember something, some author, some actor's name, writer's name. And even when I have some impression, I write my impressions on a book or on a notebook. But sometimes I don't have a specific place, a notebook to write, and I mix with someone else's ideas. Then after some time, I don't recognize which one is mine and which one is not. Mm. And from some time, I adopt a mark. I put the date of the day, and I put between brackets. Then I know that it belongs to me. But if I don't do that, even if it is a good idea, sometimes when I didn't do that, I didn't recognize that it was my writing. Mm. And I got a little frustrated. Oh, I thought something like this. It was a good idea, good impression, and I don't remember that I did it. Because I think in some aspect that our memory doesn't belong to us. The ideas come from some place that I don't know. Where is this place? And they appear on our minds. And then those ideas aren't a merit of mine. I don't know who put those ideas on my mind. And if I don't write, I can forget them.
Mm.
But Frank said something that I have thought before answering that. I regret the memory that I want to have in the future. I have thought the same as Frank.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I have talked to this week, I suppose, that when you can't live by yourself, for example, you can't move, you can't prove your food, your home, And if you lose your memory, I think it's not worthwhile continue living, I think. I think memory is one of the most important in our life.
Mm.
Does it? If not the life, does it make sense? Yeah.
Well, I think it is also that we remember to do certain things. Yeah, we remember that we have to do certain things to survive, like to remember to get out of bed in the morning, to remember to eat, to remember to wash ourselves, you know, the basic functions. And if we forget to do that, then the quality of our lives becomes worthless. Yeah, so...
And this object is a part of my memory.
Mm.
It's a diary, yeah?
Yep, yep. I have the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. But then you've got to flick through the diary to remember what you did. And then, of course, if you forget what it was, then that becomes critical.
But sometimes I forget to look at my diary. Then I lost some appointment.
Yeah, then you have to put a post-it note somewhere. Look, check your diary. Yeah. Okay. Are you learning from us, Igor? Two old men here speaking to a young person like you. Yeah, we're giving you tips for your future. When we are long gone, you can reflect on this conversation. Maybe it'll be stored somewhere. And you can reflect on this conversation. Oh, I remember on the 22nd of March 2023, there was this conversation with these two strange elderly gentlemen. What did we talk about? Yeah. Okay. Igor, question back to you. What question would you like to ask on the subject of memories or the subject of fame?
Okay, so I changed the subject. So would you like to be famous? Why? Justify your answer. I think Smart can start with this one.
If I could choose between fame and money, I would choose money. But for example, in some cases, when you are famous, you can make money easier. And probably, if I had to choose between having money and to be obligatory famous, maybe I think it wouldn't be good, in my opinion, because I think I'm free to go wherever I want to go. And if I were famous, probably I wouldn't be free to do that. And at the same time, if you have much money, it doesn't matter if you are famous or not, because even people don't know you. Probably if you are very rich, they know your name. They know who you are, but they know your name. And when you publish your name in some place, people will relate the money you have with the name and they will recognize you. I think it's not good. But in a general idea, I would like to have much money, but I wouldn't like to be famous. But if my name was famous and they won't recognize me and then my famous name would make money for me, I think it would be a good idea.
Hmm.
It's like a puzzle that you have to put many places. Yeah, puzzle.
Yep. It's a puzzle. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think if you are famous, it requires certain prerequisites. And your question Igor, lets me open the interpretation a little bit. You can be famous publicly, but you can also be famous privately. And the short answer to the question, do I want to be famous publicly? No. For the simple reason that I would not be able to live my own life. I would be under public scrutiny. I would have to say something, and people would then try to interpret what I said in this way and this way, and I would be misquoted. I would be, I would be a public figure, and they would not know who the real me is. Can you be famous privately in the circle of your friends and your family? Yes, you can, but then that is reputation, yeah? So, and I don't know if being famous is then the right word. You can be notorious, you have a reputation for being this way or that way. And then you can say, oh, Frank, he is famous for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. Yeah. And then we will know, and then it will be accepted as one of the characteristics of this person called Frank. Yeah. So, and there's nothing you can do about that, because it's the way your DNA is constructed. It's the way you think, you act. It's based on your memories, on your experience, and you just do this. And the beauty of fame is that the older you get, of fame in the private sense, the older you get, the less you care about what happens, and then you become eccentric, and you start doing things because you really couldn't give a damn about what other people think, how they're going to react, and then you just go and have a great time because you've got nothing to prove. You've got nothing to be afraid of, because basically at some point they just say, oh yeah, that's Frank. Don't worry about him. He's just the way he is. Yeah. And that's a beautiful sense of freedom. Yeah. You can actually just go and let rip and nobody cares. Yeah. Whereas if you go and let rip as a celebrity, as a person, a public figure, then all kinds of stuff happens. And I don't think that's really a good idea. Good question.
And,
follow-up question. And for you, and Igor, for you, the same question.
Yes, I would like to be famous. I don't see many disadvantages. Of course, I wouldn't do anything to be famous. I wouldn't do things that cost me very much in terms of emotional stuff or social stuff. But if I could be famous tomorrow, it would be a good thing, because I would just have more leverage on things I want to do. I would like to be, but I wouldn't do anything to be famous. Now, my follow-up question is, in your lifetime, Who is the most famous person in your opinion, in your lifetime? So it can't be someone who lived in the past. In your lifetime, through your experience, who is the most famous person who lived? In your opinion, because of course there's no data for that. So in your opinion, who is the most famous? Ismar, do you want to start?
Okay. Some people we heard about them, but we aren't sure if they existed or not, because it was a long time ago. I suppose the first one is Jesus Christ. And
so, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can't be someone who lived in the past, like someone who lived in your lifetime.
My lifetime.
So the most famous either living person or person who lived from when you were born until today.
Probably I'm not sure. I guess Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Can you enlighten us on that one? Why Michael Jackson, Isma?
No, because if I understood Igor's question, who is the most famous person in my lifetime?
Yes.
Everyone from my age or something around, they have heard of Michael Jackson. And you, Frank?
What criteria are we going to use? A famous movie star, a famous politician, a famous religious person, a famous whatever?
I didn't think about those criteria. I think, like, in general sense, like, if you tell a name anywhere in the world for any kind of person of any generation, which one would be the name most likely to be remembered by everyone you ask it?
Okay.
And so, I don't know as well, just to make my point, I have no idea, but I think Michael Jackson would be in the top three. Maybe I have other two hypotheses, but I would like to know your thoughts, Frank.
I remember we talked about this yesterday, Igor, so I come back to Neil Armstrong.
Good one.
I was 8 years old when he hopped around on the moon. And the reason that I would probably choose Neil Armstrong is the following. First of all, he did this incredible feat of taking a piece of metal 300,000 kilometers to the moon, putting it on the moon, climbing out of this piece of metal, running around on the moon for a couple of hours, and then taking this piece of metal back to Earth and going through the shield that protects us and landing in the water. So that in itself is a huge feat of courage, mental strength. But what I find remarkable about Neil Armstrong is also that he disappeared from public life. It was such an amazing experience for him that the only way he could process this is actually by not talking about it. And it was only 40 years later that he actually started giving interviews and talking about this experience. Of course, he was very enthusiastic when he landed, and they did the ticker parade on Fifth Avenue in New York, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he almost assumed a sense of normality afterwards. Yeah, he was probably still an engineer at NASA. He probably received a lot of money, but he sort of just disappeared. Yet his name sticks. Yeah. And it sticks positively. Yeah. Michael Jackson has, at least here in Europe, he has a pretty bad reputation. His music might be fantastic, but his reputation is pretty, pretty bad. So I would probably say Neil Armstrong, because he was famous, but he managed to contain all the hype and all the razzmatazz that goes with it. He was famous, but he remained a humble person. I think that's the best way I would phrase that. Yeah.
Well, that's a good point, because I watch a YouTube channel called Smarter Every Day. And this YouTube channel is a guy, American guy. I think he's from Kansas or something like that. And he's an engineer, and he travels around the United States talking to brilliant scientists and engineers. And I remember watching a video maybe 2 years ago that he visited somewhere in the United States where he met and he talked to an engineer who worked in the Apollo program, which is the one who sent people to the moon. And this guy, like maybe 70 something years old, was so smart and so brilliant, and he worked in the Apollo program, and he was completely unknown. And this guy was working like in a, like from 8 to 5, having his life, driving to home, you know, but it's like someone with such amazing feet. And when you talk about Neil Armstrong, I think about that, because like if it was today, probably he would be a huge influencer. He would sell t-shirts, online courses. But exactly. Like first of all, he was an engineer. I think it is so fascinating. And I wonder how many like brilliant people exist and we have no idea about them.
Exactly. Yeah. These hidden famous people that we forget about, and they just sort of disappear into the universe. What question do you have?
Okay, so you told that watching the man stepping on the moon was remarkable. And my questions, where were you at that time? Australia?
I was in Adelaide in South Australia, yeah.
And at that time, did we have conspiracy theories about people thinking that it was fake or something like that, or it was a little bit later down in history?
Wow. I think the term conspiracy theory is probably a very modern term. I think that people might have doubted, of course, the landing on the moon. There might have been people who doubted the actual landing at the time, and they watched it on television. And they said, no, that can't be. We can't do this sort of thing. Whether it was a conspiracy theory, and if conspiracy theories existed in those days, I personally would find it hard to believe. It might have been, it might have been people who said, I don't believe what you're saying, but that's because based on my experience. But actually, what is a conspiracy theory? It's people who actively look for something that that doesn't make sense, doesn't fit the logic of a situation. I think the three greatest conspiracy theories are the assassination of JFK in 1964, the landing of the moon, and the bombing of the World Trade Center in 2001. Yeah. I think those are probably the biggest conspiracy theories in the planet. And of those three, the one that probably gains a lot of traction is the bombing of the World Trade Center, because you can take video footage and you can manipulate it. You can do what you want with it. Whereas the landing of the moon and the JFK assassination, But I think what also, maybe it's not so much the conspiracy theory as the suppression of evidence, the suppression of information by government authorities, which nurture this kind of conspiracy theory or this doubt. Yeah. And I think it was Joe Biden who a couple of months ago released the most of the documents surrounding the assassination of John F. Kennedy, And I think the bottom line was that all the conspiracy theories that circulated around this remained unfounded. So it was one person who did it, and that's what happened. Yeah, and I'm sure that in due course, all the documents surrounding the World Trade Center bombings will be made public.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I will see this. So short answer to your question, no, I don't think so. Yeah, about conspiracy. I don't think they really existed. That doubt human nature thinking, yes or no, perhaps, but to call it a conspiracy theory, I think would be slightly exaggerated. Yeah.
Okay, so something will be interesting for me at least is to know how was the feeling at the time, because I have someone who was in Australia, Adelaide, and I have someone who was in Brazil, probably. We are talking more about when the man landed on the moon in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankie was telling me that he watched it on TV and it was very exciting. He went out to the back garden to explode the rockets into the sky and things like that. How was your experience in Brazil? Like, was it a big event? Everyone stopped to watch? How was it? Can you remember, or you don't even remember?
I was 8 in 69. But on that time, we didn't have TV at home. Only my grandfather had. But I have seen some scenes from that. And but I was so young. But it was something very enthusiastic, I think, very different.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you remember if it was like a big event? You know, like the, for example, like the in Brazil, the finals of the World Cup. Like you know that everyone will be watching. Was something like that, or you can't remember?
I wouldn't say that we can compare, but many people who had TV, they stopped to watch on TV.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the people talked a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think from my perspective, so I remember this day quite clearly, actually, in that the landing was around 11 o'clock in the morning, local time. And the event was so momentous that basically the country stopped functioning for that day. We did not have to go to school. We were given,
wow.
And it was in the middle of winter in Australia, so there was no summer holidays or anything. It was in the middle of winter.
July, I suppose, no? July?
July, well, yeah, it was. And so normally you would go to school. You had holidays in May and you had holidays in September, but July, nothing. So we didn't have to go to school, and it wasn't just, I mean, television was a bonus. We didn't have a TV, but my parents had friends who had a TV. And so we piled around to their house, and my father had his own company car, which was in the garage to be serviced, and they had a hire car, which was this 1948 GM. So the General Motors brand was called Holden in Australia, and he had this 1948 FJ Holden, which looked like something out of what you would probably still see driving around in Havana today. These really old ancient cars. So 48 to 69, it already had a couple of kilometers or miles on the clock. And we sort of chugged around from our house, maybe the 4 kilometers to our friend's house. And we sat in the family room of our friends, and all around this black and white TV. It wasn't color; it was black and white, with a very, very fuzzy image. Yeah. And if you didn't have a TV, of course, you had radio, and you could listen to this on the radio as well. So I think, if I remember rightly, for us in Australia, because it was also the right time of the day for us, it was the country stopped. Yeah, we stood still and sat down and listened and watched and were fascinated. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I make one more question about? Sure. Because I think it's very curious to know what's the real perspective from someone who lived at that time. I didn't. About the Cold War. So we study at school that Cold War, as it was a very tense moment in the history, that everyone was scared of nuclear war, and it was very tense, right? So my question is, like, when you think about that time, let's say on the 70s, beginning of the 80s, I think. Did you have a personal feeling of this tensiveness, or it, like, just when we look back today, we can tell it was tense? Like, in your daily lives, would you think about that, or it was whatever?
Who's this for, Isma or for myself?
I think it can be Isma and then you.
Okay.
Like now, I don't know if everyone feels something like that, because I suppose
Isma is
suddenly Putin can press a button and destroy the world. And till I took knowledge, I knew about that. I always thought that at the moment, everything here can be destroyed. I thought all the time that. And the same that I think now.
Okay. So you still have this feeling that, and you think about that at any time? Okay.
Yeah. Because the tension among Russia, Ukraine, and NATO are more saying United States. Mm-hmm. And now we have China inside the polemical subject.
Easy question, Isma. In my case, Igor. Easy question, Igor. In my case, a very complicated answer. So I need to start that I have a German passport. So Germany was at the epicenter of the Cold War.
Yes, yes.
However, I was not in Germany during the first part of the Cold War. I lived in Australia from 1966 to 1979, and we were involved in a very hot war in Vietnam. And Australian troops were actively engaged in combat, supporting the Americans in Vietnam. And so, especially towards the end of the Vietnam War, as the North Vietnamese were slowly advancing south to Saigon, it was the daily news. So the Cold War, in actual fact, took on a different dimension. The theater for our Cold War was in Vietnam, and it was a hot war, and it was a proxy war. It was the Chinese against the Americans. Yeah, just happening to be on Vietnamese territory. And I remember one particular scene. I was at the University of Sydney, and I was sitting, minding my own business, and an Asian person sat a couple of meters away from me, and we got into talking, and it turned out that he was a Vietnamese who had fled Vietnam towards the end of the war, and he was one of these what they called boat people. So they took boats, you know, really, really shabby boats, and they somehow made their way from Vietnam past Indonesia and managed to land on the Australian coast.
Wow.
Really, really treacherous journeys, and he survived it. And we sort of got into talking, and then that stopped. So I then returned to Germany in 1979 and got caught up in the period when there was a huge discussion between the Americans and the Germans and the Europeans, because the Americans wanted to deploy the so-called perishing missiles in Germany, missiles that were capable of carrying nuclear warheads. Now, to make the situation even more complicated, Germany was the instigator of the First and the Second World Wars. So Germany had a very strong peace movement, had a very strong developing, growing ecological movement. And the last thing that German people wanted was to have nuclear warheads on their own soil, especially when on the other side was the same nation, the same mentality, but under a different dictatorship. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there is probably no German family, including mine, that was not somehow separated. I think the majority of us all had relatives on the other side in East Germany. So the Cold War actually was very, very real. And during the time in Australia, my father's contract allowed us to go back to Germany every 3 years. And I remember standing on the German border, and I listed what stopped and what began on the other side. So I started with the local village or town boundary. It moved to the greater council in which this town was located. It moved to the state in which this town was located. It then moved up to the to the national border of Germany, so where the West German territory stopped and East German territory started. It went from there to what was then the European Common Market, or what is now the European Union, and it finished with NATO. And on the other side, 60 meters, and it was only divided by a stream, and of course all the watchtowers and the fences, etc. On the other side, you had the same thing back and reverse. So they started with the Warsaw Pact. They didn't have anything like the European Union or the Common Market, so it went down to the national border of East Germany, which was a sovereign country in its own right. Yeah. Down to the administrative districts, all the way to the village that was on the other side of the of this river. And that really brought home to me that we, that we were actually one mentality, one group of people, but there was this horrible fence dividing us.
Oh, wow.
And so we had this discussion about the nuclear warheads coming to Germany. At that time, military service was compulsory, but because I had lived in Australia, I somehow managed to go through the net. But some of my fellow students tried to become conscientious objectors, and they actually had to go to court and declare and argue why they could not go and do to their military service to defend their country against a Russian a Warsaw Pact aggression. It was enormously difficult. So the missiles never came. And then, to add to the complexity of this very simple question that you posed, I lived in London when the wall came down, but I happened to be in Germany visiting my parents when by a sheer misinterpretation of a written note, the interior minister of the East German government announced that because there had been so much trouble brewing and so many demonstrations, that the East German government was forced to relax the laws that made people stop leaving East Germany. There had been a mass exodus of people to Hungary, to the Czech Republic, and the country was bleeding people. And the interior minister made a fatal mistake by saying that the border would be open effective immediately. And that was on the 9th of November, 1989. And I happened to be in Germany watching television late at night when this whole scenario unfolded. I then went back to the UK, and then I witnessed the negotiations and the discussions about what should happen with these two Germanies. Should they be reunited as one sovereign state, or should there be two different countries? And of course, the East German economy was on its knees. The West German economy was at that time very, very strong. And to add even more to the complexity, we were governed by a prime minister called Margaret Thatcher, who was very conservative, who remembered the Second World War, maybe not directly, but through her parents, and who was taking a very, very strong position on avoiding a reunification of Germany. She didn't want that because she was afraid of a united Germany being much stronger than this thing called Great Britain. And then the Cold War also took on a very personal dimension. I had relatives in East Berlin. And when I left Australia in 1979, I spent 2.5 months in the United States, traveling around the entire country. I got into Germany at the end of 1979, and I wanted to cross the border to visit my relatives. And it was a straightforward process, but it took me 20 minutes to wait while the person behind the booth disappeared with my passport. I was standing in sort of this holding area, waiting for the man to reappear. And the reason he disappeared is because I had this gigantic US visa in my passport, which was still valid. Yeah. So I had just come fresh from the United States and was about to enter East Berlin. It's just, you know, not a good thing to do at that time. And eventually I was allowed to pass, and I changed my 25 marks into East German currency. So I had exchanged a hard currency for a very soft currency. I couldn't do anything with it, but okay. And while I was waiting for my cousin to meet me, I was approached by a short middle-aged person who wanted to know whether I was interested in exchanging further West German marks into East German marks. And I declined. 15, 20 years later, I'd not really thought about it. I had some colleagues in East Germany. Okay, so the country had reunited. We were working together. Yeah, and we were, it was basically, economically, there were differences, but politically, we were one organization. And I had some colleagues in the eastern part of the country. And I told him this story, and he said, yeah, if you would go to the authorities that are working through all the Secret Service files and all the historical documents, if you go to the authorities and put in a request, you'll probably find a report of what you did that day and where you were.
Oh, wow.
He He said it was probably somebody who was put to tag me and follow me to make sure that, because I had this dirty great visa from the United States in my passport, that I wasn't going to do something that that the East German authorities wouldn't approve of. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the Cold War from my perspective in a completely different scenario. So I wasn't actually there for most of it, but I got the tail end and I got it full blown story. Yeah.
Yes, you did. Okay, thank you for sharing.
it's a memory. Yeah, that I will never forget, and I quite and it's one that I'm happy to have, because it just, in this tapestry of life, makes life richer. Yeah, even if it's not a pleasant experience. Okay, Isma, we have, time is running. The final question from you, and I'm going to stay out of it. I'll just give it to Igor to answer.
Okay. It's my impression that today, more than in all other years in my life, I suppose that people, mainly young people, or maybe not so young, but maybe people around 30 or less, they are much eager to have fame, to be very famous. It doesn't matter if the fame will be changing in money or not. I think for some people, fame is more interesting, more important than money. What do you think about, and how do you think is it happening now?
Well, I'm not sure if people of my generation, because I'm 31, so I think we are talking about my generation. I wouldn't say they are more eager to be famous than the generation before. I wouldn't think that. I think people always wanted to be famous in general, but now we have more possibilities and we have quick compensations for being famous, because if we think about past generations, to be famous, you would have to be an actor, a very famous actor, maybe some businessman, which was quite difficult and very strictly for a bunch of people. Now we have more possibilities, so I can be famous in my room. I don't have to go to actor school. I don't have to go to a Blockbuster, anything like that. And I have very short benefits of being famous. So if I have followers on Instagram, I will have more people talking about me, which kind of message my ego. If I perceive in a career of being famous as an influencer, for example, I will have brand deals. I will maybe make some money. So I'm not saying that's the right path. I think that's probably not the right path to seek fame by itself. I think fame would be good if it was a consequence of a good work. But I think I don't think we are more eager to be famous. I think we, as human beings, we always have been eager to be famous, but now we have more possibilities and the impact of being famous is quicker than before. So that's what, my broad view of the things. And my opinion is that people will realize soon enough, I think it's just a phase of our society, that being famous for the sake of being famous doesn't make any sense, not financially, not in terms of purpose, not in terms of happiness, not in terms of in career. It's just a phase in the society. I think it will pass. People are realizing that it doesn't make sense to be famous just because you're famous, you know. That's my opinion.
Okay, gentlemen, okay. I think we could continue talking quite at length, especially sort of as the alcohol continues. My glass of wine is empty. Isma, Igor, thank you very much for bouncing these questions back and forth. I will process this and make it available to you. And Iswa, you can have the second last word. Igor, you can then have the last word.
We have discussed two interesting subjects. Of course, we could say more interesting points about memory, because I think it's something that maybe it's more important. And fame is something that maybe all those subjects are an abstract subjects, but I think about fame, for example, Igor had a good point, because we have more chance to be famous today. But I think it's a terrible moment, because many people that want to be famous, they don't have content enough to be famous and to show, to benefit people who follow them, to who listen to them. And I think it's a problem, because if you have something good to share with people, I think it's good. But as I say many times to Frank, I suppose that we can grow up in a positive way, because our species, at least at my point of view, we are in a bad point. But that's expect from some changes. That's it. Thank you all for your answers, your questions.
Okay. Thank you. You're welcome. Igor, the final word.
I don't have that much to add. Just thank you for your time, and I hope you guys have a good evening.
Evening and afternoon.
Okay. Yes.
See you next week.